trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're back. Jared's back from vacation. We'll hear about that. Wrap up the OK Kids State Baseball tournaments from around the state last week. Of course, there's British Open talk as well. It's Monday. Jim, hopefully he'll be along here. We pick his brain about all kinds of stuff. It's been a while since we've talked to him. So we should have all kinds of topics to get into with Jim Traber. So that's kind of what we've got on tap for the day. I'd like for you to get involved. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon app. The app's got it all. It's got three radio stations here in Elk City. It's got the Penny News, also Big Elk TV, Paragon TV as well, where you can watch live streams of high school sports, and that will be here before you know it, coming up in about 5 weeks or 6 weeks or so for the high school football season to be ready to go. Also, the Skinny on Sports podcast available on iTunes and also KADSAM.com. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check out what we had to say on certain topics. Jared Atha back in the house. Good morning, Jared.
How you doing?
Just wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. I'm refreshed, ready to go. You mentioned Paragon Sports about the last couple of days of this vacation. I'm thinking, okay, this is what I got to do between when I get back and when we kick off. Yeah, which it is. It's like 5 weeks because we got week zero, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. Elk City does.
We were talking about that after, like, as the Fishing Derby was winding down Saturday. It was like, man, okay, it's over for a while. And then also in the back of my mind thinking, but it'll be here before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be out on the road heading to Big Elk football before we know it. But, yeah. Fishing Derby was awesome.
How'd that go?
Thanks to everybody that came out. It was great. I think the fish were hot, just like everybody else. So maybe they weren't. They were a little bit sluggish. There was an 8-pound, 2-ounce carp caught, 6.8-pound carp. A couple of turtles. There was actually like a mussel caught.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a new one. That was a new one to the thing. Like a mussel.
That's no good, Aaron.
Or a clam, maybe a clam.
Can't have those in the pond.
Well, one of them was there. I don't know if it got thrown back in or not.
Oh, dear.
It was some sort of, crustacean. Still no snakes, thank goodness.
Yeah, that's the one I'm always worried
about.
We haven't
had a snake yet. Yeah. There was like two or three frogs and that, or two or three turtles, and then that, whatever that thing was, a clam or whatever. That big fish. Scott gave away a couple of lifetime fishing license. What was the kid's name? Dalen Ripito. Dalen Ripito was the winner of the casting contest. Him and Cooper Newberry were in the finals. They were the only two to make one in the pool. And it took them a little bit. And then finally when we decided, okay, this isn't going like we thought, closest to the pin, or closest to the deal. And then Dalen threw it right in the middle of the pool.
Perfect.
So it was like, okay, maybe we should have said that 15 minutes ago, and he would have made. But no, he won. Carter Gilliland was the drawing winner for a lifetime fishing license. So it was a really good day. It's always fun. Presidio was out there as a title sponsor. They cooked a bunch of good food and hung out all day with the park open. You had the putt-putt, and the train was rolling. Carousel was going around in circles as well. So, no, it was a really, really fun day at the, I believe, 8th annual KECO Cool 94 and this year Presidio Petroleum Kids Fishing Derby.
Very good.
Hated that you missed it.
Well, I mean,
you're on a little bit of a streak now. That's two in a row you've got.
I'm not planning this on purpose. But
oh, are you?
Listen,
are you not?
We have to sacrifice some events, I guess, because the windows are of taking a vacation are very slim. It's very narrow. So it was either that or the golf tournament.
Yeah, you can't get away.
And I was told, no, you cannot leave for the golf tournament.
Yeah, you can't do that.
So that was the one I sacrificed. But I think you guys handled it without me. I think you're okay.
I'm going to disagree. All right, so vacation, what did you do?
Hey, it's vacation, but you don't do a lot, right? The main thing we did was sit on the beach and enjoyed the cooler weather than what it was here. And did a lot of swimming. We had our own little fishing derby. We're catching a bunch of crabs and snails, and occasionally I was able to net a couple of fish. Walked the pier, saw dolphins and big sea turtles, and ate a lot of food, mainly shrimp, so and key lime pie. But that was about it. Nothing crazy. Found a lot of shells.
A lot of seashells.
A lot of seashells. Brought home a lot. And that was it. We got in last night about 9:30. So I'm a little tired today. Me and my wife were driving back from the airport. I thought, we'll never come back on a Sunday. We need to come back on a Saturday where we got Sunday to relax. So lesson learned. But anyways, it was a lot of fun, and looks like we're doing it again next year.
Well, there you go.
It's already booked.
Right there on the fishing derby again.
It's not on the golf tournament, I can tell you that. I'm not sure about the fishing derby, but the dates are not on the golf tournament. I can assure you of that.
Well, thankfully you had fun and you made it safe.
A lot of fun.
And nice and cool on the breeze. On the ocean breezes compared to this?
Man, I kept seeing people text me from home here and saying, hope you're having a good time because it is hot here. I just couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe the temperatures.
Oh, if you can't believe those, wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, it's more is coming.
Hotter. 111 is the forecasted high for tomorrow.
Has to be a record.
That's getting up there to the hottest days I can ever remember in my lifetime.
Has to be a record.
When I was kind of looking at what the weather is going to be, there is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Thursday. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be hot. If you're working outside, stay hydrated. My gosh, stay hydrated because it is.
It's dangerous.
It is. It's dangerous, and it's just awful.
It's dangerous, and don't even think about running into the store with the car on with your kid in the back seat because something bad could happen.
Yeah,
pets included. I mean, it's dangerous hot. Dangerous stuff.
Yeah, 111 is pretty up there. 111 with a south wind around 20, gusting to 25. It may literally feel like your face is just right on the blow dryer.
Yeah. You know that sound that pellet grill makes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
like taking a blowtorch. Just kind of hanging out around it.
Oh, man.
The OK Kids State Baseball Tournament's finished up this week. The 8U tournament was over in Clinton. The 8U state champion is Fletcher. Fletcher beat Poto 13-11 in the finals. Elk City Fire Frogs were there. They got they lost both of their games to Shawnee and Bing. The 10U tournament was in Salisaw. That's where I was the last couple of days of the week. The Merritt Drillers were there. They lost the first two. They lost their first two games. Hobart Sluggers. I think they did the same thing, or they might have won one. I think they did win one and then lost. And then the Sarah Eagles won their first two, beat Purcell 14-0, beat Ada 2-1. And then on, I guess it had been Thursday night, playing for a spot in the Final Four, the PC Naturals from Shawnee beat them 5-1. And they had to turn around Friday night and play Stigler. And when you lose, you'd rather play good and just get beat.
Sure.
That's not really what happened. Mm-hmm. The Eagles just uncharacteristic mistakes in the first inning that led to three Stigler runs and then no hit. I mean, you can't win if you don't score. And over those last three games, one of which was that win against Ada, I think we tallied it up. They had three hits total, like actual base hits.
Right.
you know, in three games and won one. So you just eventually that's going to catch up to you, and it did there at the end for the Eagles. But a really awesome summer, 37-7, I think, is what they ended
that's
up.
That's a great summer.
The last six of the state baseball tournament. Just ran out of steam, man.
Just get the state, and you never know what could happen.
That's right, and that's what you know. After losing to the Shawnee team on Thursday, that was the whole message. Like, listen, yeah, you lost, but you win tomorrow night. Then you go to Saturday. Everybody's the same. It doesn't make any difference. You play a game, you win it. You play for the title. You lose it, you go home.
Right.
You know that it doesn't. There's no beating somebody twice. Yeah. There's no nothing to that. But the Bullets jumped out 3-0, and just like I said, mistakes were the main culprit. But you know what? If you hit it, you can create mistakes. And that was kind of the difference.
Sure.
Putting the ball in play and allowing the other team to make mistakes.
My motto's always been is put the ball in play, good stuff could happen. Just make contact, and you're putting the pressure on the other nine out there trying to get mm-hmm. one guy out. So, yeah, that's all you could ask for.
Stillwell ends up being the champ. They didn't lose a game over there. They were pretty dominant as well throughout their run. Stillwell beat Salisaw 9-2 on Saturday. So Stillwell's the 10U champ. Then 12U was at Weatherford. The Oak City Crushers were there. They lost their two games. I know they struggled against Salisaw 14-9. They just made a bunch of mistakes in that game. They probably felt like they probably should have played another game at least there. The Weatherford Black lost both of their games as well. Lost to Tuttle 8-5. Mountain View Godibo 3-0. Mountain View lost to Stillwell, beat Weatherford, and then they bowed out with a 6-4 loss to Davenport. The team that made the best run in the 12U was the Weatherford Gray. They beat Chickasha 13-0. Were knocked off by McAllister 16-1. Came back and beat Salisaw 6-4, and then they bowed out with a 14-6 loss to Vianne. So Weatherford Gray 1-2, lost 2. They had the best showing from the local teams, at least in 12U. The finals, Stigler and McAllister. Stigler 15-4 win over McAllister. So Stigler is your 12U state champ in the OK Kids State Baseball Tournament. So a fun season, fun. Now all the kids have, what, about a month, a little bit less than a month to do whatever they want before school starts.
We have a week, and then we're picking up the bat and glove again. But, yeah, congratulations to all those kids. I know you feel like you get the state tournament and you want to win it all. We all do. But keep in mind that you want them to taste that and continue to go, right? So it's not the end of all just because you lost the state tournament. That's a great season just to get that far. And now you know what to do to get back. So keep it going, guys and girls.
That's right. All right, coming up. We got Jim at 9:30, I think, hopefully.
Speaking of a month, I haven't talked to that guy in a month.
I know. Next British Open. What a day it was yesterday. My goodness. You got a feel for one guy, though. He just couldn't get her done. 150th British Open. Played at the home of golf, St. Andrews, this last week. Finished up yesterday with Cam Smith. And kind of a round for the ages, with the final round 64 to clip Cameron Young by one shot, Rory McIlroy by two. What an amazing day it was yesterday, and especially the back nine. Because Rory steps on 10-tee with a three-shot lead, doesn't make a bogey, doesn't miss a green, and loses by two. And so I ask you, Jared, what happened more yesterday? Cam Smith winning it or Rory McIlroy losing it?
Man, you got to give credit to Cam Smith for just being in that situation and on that turn and then, you know, where he was and where Rory was, and for him to not let that pressure of trying to catch him get to him. So I almost want to say Cam Smith won it. He kept playing his golf. And took advantage of situations that Rory gave him, and he won it. So I'm going to give him more credit for sticking with it on that back nine and winning the Open, and not so much Rory losing the Open.
Yeah, it's
keep in mind I was in and out watching this between stops and on the plane and all that stuff. I did my best, but I did see the final two, three holes in its entirety. But I'll stick with that. I think Cam Smith played a great back nine to win the Open.
He definitely did that. He played an outstanding back nine. And, man, it just I think I'm on your side, but Rory has some blame here because he's up three. And
he'll be the first to tell you it, too.
36 putts. I mean, he didn't miss a green, and he two-putted every hole on Sunday. I mean, there's part of me that's like, man, what is that? What else is he supposed to do? He didn't make a bogey-free final round. But he left the door cracked enough for somebody to run through it. And actually, two guys ran through it, to be honest, because Cameron Young beat him by a shot. I think 18 plays out differently, or a good chance it plays out differently, if he just needs a birdie instead of an eagle. But at the same time, he didn't make a putt all day. He made nothing. Whereas the exact opposite was going on with Smith. That dude was so clutch, especially with the putter. And then he gets, you know, he gets to 17. The road hole is one of the hardest holes in the world. He, you know, and he hits a good drive, Cam Smith does, and then puts himself behind the road bunker, which your options are completely limited from there. You have to putt it around the thing, unless you want to try to flop it over off that hard pan, which nobody really wants to try that shot. So he putted it around the bunker and let it kind of go to where it goes. And it was like, man, he's got like a 12-footer for par. And he felt like there was zero chance he was missing. And he poured it right in, birdied the last to kind of to slam the door shut, even after Cameron Young made eagle on the last hole. So Cameron Smith did a lot of things to win that golf tournament. I 100% agree with you. But if Rory takes care of what Rory's the holes he's supposed to take care of, like everybody else was, he didn't have enough holes to catch him.
Yeah.
He's starting right on the back nine. And I wonder, I think it was Zinger maybe made the made the comment, did, you know, Cameron Smith's five birdies in a row, did it almost take Rory by surprise? Because you know what it felt like? It felt like one of those majors that Tiger would always win. He'd get ahead two or three shots, not screw up, make somebody come get him, and nobody could. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that was the game plan for Rory. And it was a fine – it makes sense with where he was on number nine, but it was almost like he kind of had it on autopilot and he couldn't flip the switch once he started looking at the leaderboard and Cam Smith was birdieing every single hole.
Going into yesterday where the standings were, it felt like, you know, we've seen Rory go into a Sunday with this opportunity, but we all kind of had it in the back of our mind that it's still Rory. He's going to finish top five, top three, but he's not, you know, not going to finish it. Going into yesterday, I thought, this seems different because it feels like it's more, you know, it's over in Europe. It's more of his territory. The fans are clearly in his favor, wanting him to win it right there. It felt different to me. So, but then again, I step away and think, well, it shouldn't be shocking to me that he couldn't finish it out again.
Yeah, he ends up top 10 in all four majors. The aggregate to par for the guys that made the cut in every major, he way ahead of anybody at 29 under. So he played the best. I mean, he's got a second, a third, a fifth, and an eighth, but not a first. And I was thinking to myself on Saturday, okay, tomorrow's round is like one of those legacy-defining rounds for Rory McIlroy. Is he going to be an all-time great? Knock off his fifth major at the age of 33, and then who knows from there, right? Maybe he just needs that one to really get on a streak like he had, you know, in the early 2010s, where he went four in like 5 years or whatever, four years. And I was also thinking the all-time greats get this done. The all-time greats get that one. That one goes in the win column. Going into it, that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. But after seeing it play out, it's hard for me to blame him for losing because of what happened, because of the way that Cameron Smith played. And by the way, and Rory didn't give it to him by making mistakes. He just didn't keep up making birdies, you know? And so it doesn't feel like we should come in here today and just blast off because Rory didn't win. But at the same time, there's some fault there allowing the door to just barely crack open and Cam Smith to come barging in there. And, you know, and it wasn't like Rory's missing a bunch of little short putts. He had it in range, and it seemed like every one of them was going to go in, and they just didn't.
Yeah.
You know, like when you'd see the little worm cam, and it's going, oh, that looks really nice, and all of a sudden it would quit breaking.
Right.
Go the other way. You know, it just, you know, the one came up just a little short from like 40 feet, like a half a roll short. It felt like Rory played good enough to win. It's just that Cam Smith played better. And I think that's where you fall.
Help me understand something here, because you're more in tune with the history of golf. Is the Open, does it have a history? Does St. Andrews have a history of seeing amazing putting? Because it felt like that's all I saw the last 4 days. Not all I saw, but felt like people were making long putts. Wasn't there a 68-foot?
Ian Poulter made that one from,
yeah.
Well, how, I don't even know how far it was.
Yeah. And it just felt like I just kept seeing long putt after long putt after long putt. Is that just a Lynx course thing? Is it a St. Andrews thing? Or was that just something I was keying in on for some reason?
Well, for one, they you get long putts there because 14 of the 18
sure.
are double greens.
Right.
You know, and it was so fast that it was hard to get it to stop, you know what I'm
yeah.
saying? And so
you got it on, yeah.
And the green speeds, like, they're not worried about the ball rolling out. So they can be more aggressive because the greens aren't so lightning fast, which they can't be. For one, the undulation that's there. And two, if the wind started blowing, it would just blow balls off the green if
right.
they were very fast because of the slopes and the bumps and the humps. So I think part of that is what leads to it. A little bit of them being able to hold longer putts because there's no fear as far as the speed goes. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
you're not scared of it rolling by 6 or 8 feet from 90 feet. You're not worried about that. So I think that lends into it just a little bit to being able to make those long ones. And quite frankly, you just get more of them because a lot of places a shot that would end up off the green and you'd be chipping stays on the greens because they're so massive mm-hmm. in size. Is St. Andrews itself, obviously the home of golf, and it's got all the history in the world, and it's never going to get outside of the British Open rota. It's always going to be in there. But is it too easy?
I don't know. The winning score, 20 under, and he had 19 behind him and 18. Yeah, listen, I know the fairways are incredibly wide. Which one was a double football field wide?
Yeah, number one in 18.
Yeah. I mean it allows you to make mistakes that you can easily recover from. And then of course the lack of trees and you're still seeing guys get out of the high gunch area stuff. So I mean, because sometimes I'll watch it as a novice of a golfer I am, I think, man, I like to play there because I don't have to worry about hitting a tree or losing my ball into incredibly hard brush. But there are some stuff that I saw. Who had it land in the bush?
Yeah, the gorse bushes. Xander Schauffele hit one there.
Yeah, I mean, but but these are pros. These are professional golfers. I can see where that can be an argument, but I'm going to say no. Because the conditions for this weekend were very good. I mean, you mentioned the wind or what, that wasn't much of a factor, but that can be a factor there when you're right there on the coastline like that. So, and it could be cool, you know. People fail to forget that over here, especially right here in Western Oklahoma. But I think the conditions were very good this past weekend, and it made it look like that was an easy course. But I think there are more challenges than you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's so up to the weather.
Yeah.
Scoring. You know, they had the place far firm and fast exactly like they wanted to where the ball would roll into the wispy stuff and you know, unless it was just exactly perfect, or roll into bunkers that they didn't think they could get to, all that kind of stuff. That was all working in the favor of say, the RNA and being able to set up the golf course. The problem was wind. There was none. Very, very light winds.
No, there was.
The entire time.
Which I thought was an oddity.
It is an oddity.
Yeah.
And that's what you get. It doesn't matter what course. Maybe Carnoustie is the only one that wouldn't be like this. But for the most part, if you don't get wind over there, they're going to rip them apart because of how fast it plays and how short the second shots are going to be because of the ball rolling forever and ever and ever and ever. So, I mean, it looks a little bit strange when you're – I mean, gosh, they were driving 9, 10, 12, 18, and some of them got pretty close to number two. You know, that's five of the 11 or 12 par fours. I guess there's, what, 14 par fours?
Because par one, three, 14.
14 par fours, yeah, because there's two par threes and two par fives on a total. So, you know, you're driving, you're able to drive 30%, 30 to 50% of them. You know, number seven they were getting close to before the wind switched. And so there's nothing you can do about that lengthwise because there's nowhere to go. And so that just leaves it up to the weather and the conditions. The wind especially was really benign this week. And when you see just exactly how good those guys are, when you don't give them – you can put the pin anywhere, and they did. I mean, they had pins 2 feet on the green a lot of times. But it doesn't matter. If there's no wind, even as firm and as fast as it was, they can still figure out how to get into a position to make a whole bunch of birdies. And that's exactly what we did. What did they say? It was Rory – two putted 10 times, I think, for birdies. Previous record was Tiger at 5, so he doubled that, driving it on greens and hitting par 5s and 2, which for him is a good thing because yesterday he couldn't make a single thing. Did not one putt a hole. 36 putts. And that's the part where you're like, gosh, did he give it away?
Yeah.
By not being able to hole putts. I don't know if giving away is the right thing, but he definitely allowed it to happen to him.
Yeah.
Just us. Having trouble locating Jim. So,
well, that's okay. We could use the next 30 minutes for me here. I got to wish my beautiful wife a happy birthday, and it's going to take 30 minutes to do it.
Okay. Well,
is that okay with you?
I'll sit back.
Is that okay? Not today. Today's her birthday. So, happy birthday to Allie, my beautiful wife.
Happy birthday.
She is 30 something years old. That's all I'm going to say. It doesn't look a day older.
Oh.
You got some.
Are you
going
to keep going?
I should have cued you in. I didn't.
No, I knew it was her birthday.
I didn't drop this in. Drop this, or I dropped this on you. My apologies.
Here we go.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
There you go. Little Minions. Happy birthday to your wife, Allie. So, how much did you get to watch of the British Open? I'm not calling it the Open Championship. It's the British Open. How much of that did you get to watch throughout the week?
I watched I was interested, obviously, in what Tiger was going to do on Thursday and, of course, Friday. But, listen, I had it on, but I'd glance over at it when I came inside from the beach every once in a while on those 2 days. Saturday, you know, I watched a lot of it Saturday. Not like wall to wall, because, you know, it was early. So, and it was interesting to see what Rory was doing on Saturday, what Hovland was doing. We didn't mention him. What Hovland was doing, it looked like it might be a two-man race going into Sunday between those two. And then, of course, yesterday, able to catch a lot of it in the airport waiting for flights. Then get in the air, and once we got where they say, okay, you can turn on your devices, and I'd check it then. So, I mean, it was sporadic, but I paid a lot of attention to basically the final nine holes on Sunday. So that was a long answer to that question. But we didn't mention Victor Hovland, though.
First top 10 in a major in his career,
yeah,
which is kind of shocking with the talent that he's had. I'm not surprised that it came on a British Open golf course. Because if you follow him, he's extremely talented, but the one thing that he has trouble with is chipping. And so with the way the conditions were and the way the turf is over there, you know, it kind of takes a little bit of that importance out because you can just putt it or you can just roll it along the ground and you don't have to necessarily hit those the higher soft shots that a lot of times he has a little bit of trouble with on golf courses over here. So I thought he was definitely going to be in the mix. He just couldn't really get anything going to start on yesterday in the final round. And it, kind of that group was that way. You know, the day before, I think they made 11. Rory and Victor played together in the third round on Saturday. I think they made 11 birdies and an eagle. You know, and then yesterday, gosh, what did they have? Rory made two birdies and that's it. I don't remember. Victor made at least one. He did birdie the number 12. But, you know, a far cry from the fireworks that were going on with that group on Saturday. And it, because it was happening in the group ahead. I mean, Cam Smith and Cam Young were sensational throughout the day. Man, they were just, you know, Smith made those five in a row, but Cam Young was keeping pace for a lot of that, just right there with him, being able to try to stay in touch. And, you know, that was just the difference, I think, that the second, the next to last group was able to play a little bit more free, you know, trailing going in, falling even further behind when Rory made a birdie or two on the front nine. And then the floodgates were wide open, and we've seen that out of Cam Smith. Heck, he's the first guy ever, the second guy ever, to win the British Open and the Players' Championship in the same year. And it was so reminiscent of that last round down there at TPC Sawgrass, the way he just blitzed the thing with just bunches of birdies in a row. And then, you know, by the time he got on the back nine yesterday, it was like, oh my gosh, is he just going to birdie all of them? It's kind of what it felt like,
yeah.
You know, until, you know, the heck of the up and down on 17 was just incredible after a really poor second shot, a place where he should not have been trying to hit it. He did, and then he got that up and down. You mentioned Tiger. It was shocking to me how bad he played. And it all started from the word go. Hit it right down the middle on number one, got in a divot, and then hit it in the water. You know, something that, you know, it was kind of like, okay, the foreshadowing of the way his week was going to go was that.
Well,
you know,
what's that old saying about the first hole in golf in your round can reflect the entire round?
Yeah, and it went ahead and
reflected two rounds.
Yeah, yeah, it did both. I mean, he made nothing. He clearly wasn't comfortable with the green speeds. He was kept on leaving it way short. Like, and that's just not something you normally see out of him. If there's anybody that's aggressive in getting it to the hole, it's normally Tiger, but it wasn't this week. It wasn't his week. It was a really cool scene Friday morning, watching him finish up 18. I think it's an interesting conversation of, okay, what's next? You know, you've seen in the past the greats of the game, when they know it's the end at St. Andrews, they stop on that bridge. They, you know, get pictures. They, you know, they do all of the kind of the that thing there on that bridge. He did not. He went right across it. And then, you know, obviously the love from the guys. I thought it was such a, man, such reminiscent of 2000 when he was standing on number one tee and Jack was finishing on 18.
Oh, yeah.
This time it was Rory standing on number one tee and Tiger going up 18. Kind of that pass the baton moment that just never – it didn't materialize yesterday. I mean, I think that's, for Rory, what's going to hurt more than anything.
Yeah.
And this, I said this on Wednesday, why I picked him to win the thing, was because he understands the history. He understands the importance of what this was with 150, with St. Andrews – and also, is this Tiger's last? He understood all of that.
Right.
And maybe more than anybody else, he had that pressure on him because he is the guy that has the tournaments won already and the ability to win more that can kind of get into the all-time great conversation more than a lot of these other guys.
Yeah, part of me thinks he's putting a lot of pressure on himself because he's, you know, been very vocal about how this was his favorite course. He, you know, preparing just to play this one, you know, dare we say last major, to try to win it. So there's a lot of pressure he's putting on himself. You know, sometimes I don't say this in a mean way, but sometimes Tiger, just stop talking about it. Just stop putting that in your head. Just go play your game and everything else could be okay. But then I think that pressure kind of reflected on his play, where he was doing everything that you mentioned. But it makes you wonder, is this it? I mean, with major golf tournaments, I don't think it's the last time we'll see him golf. I'm not saying that. But there's going to come a time where he's going to sit down and go, you know what? I got it. That's it. I got, you know, maybe there is one more major in him where that passing of the baton happens, and that could be in Augusta.
Yeah, I mean, he said he's not retiring. That's not on his radar screen whatsoever. a lot of time you just don't see him, I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, we might see him, but I don't know that we're ever going to really see him anymore.
Yeah.
He actually talked about what it took for his to get his body to get that leg in shape enough to do it. And I think eventually and hopefully honestly hopefully sooner than later, because if he can't, if this is what he's going to be, kind of a parade sideshow that tries to make the cut but doesn't have any real serious chance to be able to contend. If for me, as a guy that's rooted for him and loved watching him play, I'd rather him not than to be this, because this isn't Tiger Woods. This is a broken down bodied Tiger Woods that the only reason he's even able to play is because you're seeing the mental toughness that he's displayed throughout his career. You know, they ask him about, everybody remembers the 2008 U.S. Open out at Torrey Pines that he won with a broken leg. And they've asked him, you know, the pain from that versus this. And he goes, this is way worse because it's always there. It's always constant. Hmm. And I hope, I mean, we may be seeing the greatest thing about him being his worst thing about him. And that is his mind. And his mind believes that he can do things that his body can't let him do. And so, you know, pride is a thing, man. We all know it. And I hope that the pride, the pride that he's displayed throughout his career doesn't allow for him to make choices that don't need to be made as far as playing these tournaments. And just not being there, man. It's no fun to sit there and see every single major that he played in this year. They fly up the graphic. This is the worst he's ever done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not what anybody wants to see from Tiger Woods. He's got nothing to prove to anyone that the 2019 Masters was that moment of, I can still do this. Watch this, and winning it. And you know, everybody knows about the leg, and you think about the wreck, but also the fact that he's got his back is fused. You know, I mean, there's so much more going on there with his body than what you realize. So I think we're going to see him more, not just here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if he continues this and playing like this and not even being a factor, for me, I hope he shuts it down sooner rather than later.
Yeah. You'd almost want to see him. This begs the question, did he come back too early? Because you almost would wish that he had not to rehab his body.
That's the interesting part, because it seems like, you know, he was definitely looked better as far as walking around this week than he did at Southern Hills and then he did at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that's just because that whole piece of property is dead flat, you know, so there wasn't as much strain on his body. But then, okay, so then what happened to the golf game? You know, he prepared more for this tournament than either of those first two, you know, playing a couple of competitive rounds in that pro-am, being out there doing a bunch of work at St. Andrews last weekend. And then also the first few days, I mean, you don't see him playing 18-hole practice rounds hardly ever anymore for body and just because he knows the places. But he got out there and did that twice, one just kind of wedging and putting, the other actually playing 18 holes. That's not something that happens. And so it felt like you put all of his eggs in this basket and then just didn't get it done. And you wonder, you have to wonder, and it's always going to be a thing, but you have to wonder how much the pain that he's in physically is going to even allow him to be able to perform, you know. And so I don't know. I don't think we've seen the end, but I think the end is a lot closer. What's that? Objects in the mirror appear closer than they really are, or whatever, or the other way around, whatever it is. I think that we're nearing the end, unless something drastically changes with his body, and that just doesn't seem to be a possibility right now.
No. Well, I kind of wish it was cool. I know it was cool to see him at Augusta, and obviously see him in Tulsa. But part of me kind of wished that he had waited a little longer to get his body and his mind right to compete at this high level again. So maybe now this was last major, he'll take advantage of this time off and get that way. And hopefully that way before Augusta next year. And I'm sure we'll see him before then. He's going to have to play, obviously, before the Masters, but take a long time off to take care of himself, both physically and mentally.
Yeah, and here's the truth. That may not be possible. The time may not even matter because he just isn't able to ever get back physically to any semblance of what he was before the wreck. You see the MLB draft last night?
Well, I saw the headlines. A couple stood out. Obviously, Holiday going number one.
Yeah, Jackson Holiday, number one from Stillwater High School to the Orioles. Only the second time in the history of the Major League Baseball draft that dates back to 1965. Only the second time in history that the son of a former Major League Baseball player went number one overall. You know the other time?
No, I don't.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, yes, okay. I was trying to think. Vlad Jr., no, he wasn't number one. But my knowledge of the MLB draft is not as good as, say, the NFL or NBA.
Yeah, it's just because
there's so many, and yeah.
It's not the spectacle. Right. So Holiday goes number one. I mean, any thoughts and any possibilities of him actually playing at Oklahoma State, I'm sure, are done now.
Oh, well,
I mean,
that's
it's way too much money to turn down. So
there a way to twist that around to be NIL money, and he could stay?
Yeah, I don't think so.
advertise for the Orioles at Obrate. I don't know.
I wonder. I would love to know the answer to this because it's going to be impossible to know. But how much money did Cade Horton make over the past 4 weeks of the Oklahoma Sooners baseball season?
Out of NIL deals?
No, I'm talking about because he's the number seven pick in the draft.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
I mean,
definitely upped his stock. He was on the national stage like that. Sure. Yeah. There's probably some teams blown thinking, dang it, I wish he wasn't that good at that time because we were planning on getting him.
Yeah, but not at number seven. You know, even it's amazing because even going into the College World Series after he'd thrown the way he'd thrown, it was still a little bit of a thought of, okay, yeah, but how far can he climb? And then, bam, number seven overall pick to the Cubs. You know, he made himself millions of dollars starting down in Globe Life in the Big 12 tournament finals against Texas. Here you go. He wasn't even on the Baseball America top 300 before the tournament started. So that tells you just how much he skyrocketed up that draft board, ended up number seven. And so, you know, he's another one. Thoughts of him coming back because he's just a redshirt freshman, but he was draft eligible. So any thoughts of him coming back to Norman are over.
Nah.
Yeah, he's going to be gone. Justin Campbell was drafted 37th overall as a first-rounder from Oklahoma State, the pitcher. Then you also had Jake Bennett was 45th, Peyton Graham 51st. Those guys were just into the second round there with Bennett and Peyton Graham. But it kind of mirrors what we saw, right? The three guys, at least in the OU run, that were the best were those three, and they all have been rewarded with really high draft spots here in the Major League Baseball draft. think it's just kind of a cool thing to have Oklahomans represented in that thing.
Oh, I love it. And that's why I've always encouraged people to go out and watch high school baseball, because you never know who you're watching. Because Oklahoma produces good baseball. Everyone wants to say, you know, football, and we produce good football out here in Oklahoma. But for a long time, going back to the, you know, I credit people like Johnny Bench and Mickey Mantle for starting that in Oklahoma, that love of baseball, and it's reflective. So go out and watch these games, because we got a guy right here in our own backyard we could be talking about, and you never know.
Very interesting. I just got that exact same text on my phone. We could be really glued to this thing in 2 years.
Yeah.
With Cash and what he could become.
Watched a guy at Verdigris, a shortstop, who's committed to OU, but man, he's a special player. He's one of the top players in the state that's going to go play at OU. His name escapes me. I'm horrible at that. But you just never know who you're watching when you're watching them. So go out and watch these guys. Very cool.
Did you get to catch much of the Big 12 media days?
I caught highlights on Twitter, basically.
If it's up to Mike Gundy, obviously Bedlam's not going to get played.
Yeah.
Any problem with that?
I don't know why. So, I mean, it's a year later. We're still mad about OU and Texas leaving. When I keep going back to what Jim has always said, if it was you guys, you'd do the same thing. I'm not saying just OSU. Everybody else in the league would have done this exact same thing. So, I don't know why. I mean, it's time to move on, but for him saying that, I don't know. I mean, he's trying to burn that bridge, and I guess that's a way of telling OU, if you still want to continue the series, we don't want to.
Yeah, but why would OU either?
Yeah, that's true too.
I mean, it's easy to, I guess it's easy to think of it in that terms when you've got a spot at the big table, being OU or Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's easy to tell, oh, you'd have done it too, which everybody knows that anybody would have. That's very true, just because of the massive increase in money. But I don't think that makes it any easier for those other schools that are going to be sitting here fighting for scraps. You know, the USC thing happened while you were here. Then it looked like it was going to be fast-tracked. Here comes four or five, maybe even six Pac-12 schools. Now they've got the 30-day window to kind of negotiate on their own to try to keep their lead together versus
join
the Big 12.
I had a feeling if we're going to see a repeat of what the Big 12 did way back when Missouri and the others left. And they formed a bond, said, we're going to stick together with 10. I had a feeling that could that still be a possibility out there in the West Coast? It looks like – I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you're anybody – but why would you? I know Oregon and Washington are the ones kind of pushing this, but they're also the most attractive ones. And so if you're Arizona schools, if you're anybody else out there, why would you turn over your ability through grant of rights deals to not be able to be mobile when you're asked? Doesn't make any sense. And, oh, by the way, no one cares out there. That's the stuff that you know you read on the internet from the Utah fans or some of those. They're desperately wanting to jump at the chance, because instead of having to hang out with Stanford and Cal, who don't give a crap about college football, you're now down here into Texas and into the middle part of the country to where people do, and they do. That's the thing. They do care. So why in the world would you hitch your wagon to places, A, that don't care, and B, Oregon and Washington, who will go to the Pac-10 as soon as they're or the Big Ten as soon as they're asked? It doesn't make any sense for those schools to kind of get conned into doing that, and I don't believe they will. I think this is just a period of Oregon and Washington either waiting on the Big Ten to ask or just delaying as long as they can to get a full idea of what their options are, and then something's going to happen. And I think you're going to see, you know, however many teams it is, 4 to 6, end up in the Big 12. And it'll be the ones that play football, and it'll be the ones that care about playing football. It's what I think is going to happen. But it's funny because it was like, slow down, like, you know, hit the brake. in what looks to be pretty fast-tracked negotiations there. And like the Big 12 was asked, and so that invitation is on the table, and we'll know something within the next, shoot, now it's probably like 25 days when that window runs out for the negotiations for the Pac-12 to try to get a new TV deal, which, I mean, who would pay for it? Nobody's going to, because everyone sees the writing on the wall. Why give you something when we can basically force your hand into where we want you, and then everything kind of works itself out that way?
Yeah.
Any interest in the SEC media days?
A little bit, maybe for the two obvious reasons, that being Saban and Fisher. And what's that going to be like? Do they split it up like they do?
I know that, they have four or five a day. And so I was trying to figure out what the schedule was and see if they were there the same day.
SEC Media Days, it reminds me of Super Bowl Media Day. It's a circus at times. Fans show up and they're crazy, and then there's some reporter that wants to make a name for themselves, so they ask a crazy question. It's an absolute circus, but that could put it over the top. I mean, that could be big top circus right there if those two guys are in the same room together.
They're not.
Darn.
Alabama tomorrow, Texas A&M is on Thursday. So they even put a day in between them.
to make sure someone's checked out their hotel room in time.
Yeah, LSU, Ole Miss, and Missouri today. Alabama, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt tomorrow. Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky on Wednesday. Auburn, Tennessee, Texas A&M wrap it up on Thursday from down there in Hoover, Alabama at the Big 12 Media Days. Or, I'm sorry, at the SEC Media Days. You're right. It is a circus. I mean, there a whole bunch of people go. Like regular old fans will show up down there.
Yeah. That doesn't happen in the Big 12. That doesn't happen anywhere. They're crazy. But that's SEC, right? Fans are nuts. And they're passionate. You talk about love of football, that's up and down that league.
Oh, it's in Atlanta instead of Hoover.
Oh, it's Atlanta.
The College Football Hall of Fame. It's where the SEC Media Days are going to be take place. Yeah, it's a circus. I can't wait to see some of the quotes that come out of there. Back to the Big 12 right quick. I mentioned Gundy. It did feel like he kind of, more than anybody else there, was trying to step up and take the role as kind of the alpha dog in the conference, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Because of how long he's been there, how successful Oklahoma State has been under him. He really does feel like the logical choice to be kind of the alpha dog of the new Big 12, at least to get started.
I mean, he's everything you said, and he is the veteran coach now in the league. He still was even when Riley was at OU. As far as longevity is concerned, he's been around this league a long time. So he has the right to say everything he said. I'm not saying he couldn't say it. I just question some of the stuff he says, but that's neither here nor there. But
are you surprised that OU and Texas were involved in hiring a new commissioner?
Yeah, I am.
I am too. I thought, you know, his point about that, I thought was spot on. Why? Why did that?
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked him, or did you let them in the room? He said no. And I don't understand why you would either.
Well, either, if you're OU or Texas, why would you want to be in there?
That's a good point too.
Go ahead, guys.
Maybe sabotage him.
Yeah. But they could also argue that we're still part of this league. We still get a cut. We still have a say.
Do you think any of this changes when those two teams leave?
I don't know when they're going to leave, but I don't think it changes anything, whether it's going to be early or when they said it, when the grant of rights expires. I don't think it changes anything.
I think this is it.
I think it was last year.
Yep, for two reasons. One, the other one's coming in to the Big 12.
Yeah.
And more importantly, though, we know the Big Ten is going to happen in 2024 with USC and UCLA. Wouldn't it be an SEC move to get out in front of that and have a year to get more established next year in 2023?
Right.
It's all a race, right? It's an arms race, and it just is. And so
where would the money come from? The SEC going to help him out? say, hey, we need you guys over here now. So
I think there could be a reason why you're seeing some of these tier three rights going to the TSPN.
Okay.
You know, and stuff like that. I think that it's going to be a race. I mean, 2024 at the latest, because right now it's supposedly 2025 because that's when the grant of rights ends. Well, that means then the SEC is going to be a year behind the Big Ten. I do not see that happening. It doesn't make any sense. That's not the way the SEC's ever really operated, being second fiddle to anybody. And so to me, I think you're going to see either next year at the latest starting the same year with the new conference that the Big Ten is. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if this isn't it.
Final note on college football. According to, did you see the latest from 24/7 Sports?
What is it?
About OU commit Jackson Arnold. They've bumped him up to a 5-star. But Rival still has him as a 4-star. But it feels like he's on the verge of being a blue chipper by the time he comes to campus. Like a full-on, everybody gives him a 5-star. Because he did really well down in Florida.
Yeah, and he also won the Elite 11. All the consternation over OU recruiting has been gone the past week and a half.
Yeah.
One of the guys, I can't say his name. He's a defensive end commit. He dominated down there in Florida this week, to the tune of the most valuable player on the defensive ends, and he's going to rocket up those recruiting rankings.
Well, I think it's Venables. It's something OU fans got to get used to. Is what was here? It was offer the best as soon as they could get him on. Get him to commit as soon as they could and see what sticks. And then Venables is more of a wait-and-see kind of recruiter. And I think I like that. And I think, didn't he say it's more of an approach of let them feel it out and make a decision, because that could keep him here longer term.
Yeah, obviously.
In today's transfer portal world.
I think the goal with the strategy that you're talking about is that these guys that commit – it means something more.
Yeah.
And the chances of them decommitting go less by allowing them to go out and take their visits. Because his thing is, if you're taking visits, you're not committed, which is really strange in this day and age. But I also think who they target is different too. Yeah, this guy's name is, I don't know. Adepuju.
Well, we better.
Adepuju. Adebore, he's from Kansas City, Missouri. He's also gotten a 5-star today on three recruits.
Man.
Number 7 in the nation, defensive end that Oklahoma picked up. Yeah, they went from everybody worried to death about recruiting to all of a sudden Oklahoma's on fire recruiting here in the month of July. And according to all the commits and the guys on campus, it's not over yet for this month. So from 40th to like 11th.
Yeah.
In the team rankings, and that could go even higher here over the next few days.
Yep.
All right, everybody, have a great Monday. Stay safe out there. Drink plenty of water. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.